The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Do we have an, are we doing a cold opener?
We're calling Ben Daddy?
Yeah.
Do you think that would be?
Yes. Serving Daddy vibes.
Huh?
Big Daddy energy.
Did I go to a car tour? This is Toby Manhire. It's October the 15th, the morning after the election, 2023. Here we are in the Spinoff studio with Ben Daddy Thomas and Annabelle Lee Mather. Jiahi Butler is here on a Sunday making it all happen. The Spinoff members are our beloved patrons, friends,
shareholders.
New Zealand is back on track. The All Blacks won the rugby. It was very stressful. It's gauche to talk about it, but it was very stressful.
It wasn't stressful as of last night when there was a presumptive national government and national governments win rugby World Cups.
Well, there you go. I must.
John Key brought two home.
That's right. Everything changed suddenly, and that was the difference when they were there. Probably they had a big cardboard cutout in the dressing room and Stade France, Annabelle, of Christopher Luxon, the presumptive Prime Minister.
Maybe. I was very disappointed for Ireland. I was cheering for Ireland and all oppressed people, which is why I'm not on speaking terms with Australia this morning again. I only just started talking to them again, and now we're not talking.
You're referring, of course, to the voice referendum, which was voted down by the people of Australia. You this morning missed the rugby, Ben, because you were being a pundit.
I was a Q&A.
Questions and answers television program.
Q&A, yeah, Sunday morning current affairs show. And it reminded me of when I was in Parliament and tobacco companies would call to try and recruit me. And at that point, you knew it happened every every 6 to 12 months, everyone in Parliament gets a call from the tobacco companies as they work their way down the list.
Yeah.
And everyone tells them that, you know. Q&A was the same. I think I was actually approached with, I think the opening line was, how much are you invested in the Rugby World Cup?
I'm sure that's not true.
And not knowing the outcome on Saturday, I was like, well, we don't know if we're going to win, so I can't let myself get hurt again. And yeah.
Well, thank you for your service.
You were great, again. By the way. People were texting me about you.
So stressful. Was he? Good. I'm going to watch that later. I haven't looked at anything this morning, so I don't know what's happened. So you, Ben, and Annabelle will have to fill me in. But I do know how everything was looking as of midnight last night. Shall I just go through it quickly up top? Anyone has missed it, you can sort of skip forward about 45 seconds if you know everything. You bloody know it all. The preliminary results, 100% of preliminary results, that's for advance and ordinary votes. We've got 20% of special votes to come. That's important. We'll come to that later. But as of all of the votes counted, National has won, I think we can say. A W for National. Bigger vote than the polls had suggested, 39%, which would be 50 seats. Labour has fallen quite dramatically, certainly from its last election result of 50.01 to 26.9, which would garner 34 seats. As it stands, that's 17 electorate and 17 list. Quite a few big departures there. Maybe we'll come to that again too. ACT increased their vote, but not by as much as they would have hoped 6 months ago. to 9%. That's 11 seats. They won Tamaki for Brooke Van Velden, who unseated Simon O'Connor, the socially conservative National MP.
Never underestimate the ladies.
The Greens.
By that, I mean the lady voters of Tamaki. Sorry, continue.
The Greens up to 10.8% and get 14 seats as it stands. I think that's just tipped over into 14. That includes three electorates, Chloe Swarbrick. All to your point.
All ladies. Annabelle,
ladies.
The ladies. It's ladies' night.
Chloe Swarbrick retained Auckland Central.
Mm-hmm.
Tamitha Paul smashed it in Wellington Central in a three-way race, but it was clear very early that it was hers.
Mm.
I saw her a bit on the campaign in there, and she's a very good campaigner.
She's fantastic.
She's very impressive. I mean, how long has she been on the Wellington Council now? About 4 years, and she's about 16, 17 years old. So.
And she was the first president of Māori, president of Vic University, Wahine Māori.
I actually was talking to someone in the Green Party about this, someone senior Green Party who was just sort of marvelling at it, and you can see it. She has an incredible kind of rhythm. Mm-hmm. When she speaks, she's just a natural orator. Mm. She sort of rocks back and forth, and it's kind of quite mesmerising. Mm. Anyway, Julianne Genta, Rongotai, also winning. So that's three electorates for the Greens, which is three more than they had two elections ago. So that's impressive for them. New Zealand First is back, 6.5%, eight MPs, another Wellington Council link. Andy Foster's in, seventh on the list. Welcome back, Andy. Te Pāti Māori is sitting on 2.6% with no list MPs, but four of the seven Māori seats, four electorate seats, which creates an overhang as it stands of one. What that means is when the number of electorates you win, the number of seats you win via electorates, is greater than you would have got when your party vote is made proportionate. Mm. So that means the Parliament, as it stands, will have 121 MPs until November 25th, after November 25th, which, owing to a very strange quirk in electoral law, which almost nobody knew about, apart from Andrew Geddes and Graham Edgler.
Graham Edgler knew.
Because the ACT candidate died once voting had begun. There will be a by-election on the 25th of November in Port Waikato, and that will almost certainly, almost certainly be won by Andrew Bailey, which will provide another seat to National, which could end up being in some ways critical because, though it's a victory—
Because Andrew Bailey is currently in on the list.
Yes.
But he will resign as a list MP, and so they will get whoever is next on the list.
Yeah. Assuming he wins, stands and wins.
Assuming he does.
Who is next on the list, by the way? Or am I interrupting your flow?
You're jumping a bit forward, but I think it's a good question. In terms of where National sits on the list, you mean? Who's in and who's out?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if Dale Altea Stevens
I don't know. He's about fourth, I think. He's four down.
I
think it's Nancy Liu.
Yeah, and then
Emma Chatterton,
who's in Rimutaka, and then James Christmas.
And then Dale Stevens.
James Christmas, a former colleague of yours.
Former colleague of mine, very impressive. Ben. And I
tipped as a future Attorney General.
Yeah, I think certainly figured in National's plans for after the election. And so, but, you know, currently not in because of the huge number of electorates.
Right. So the kind of paradox of it, in a way, is that you can do better. By doing better than you expected, you can bring in fewer list MPs than you thought you would because of the way that the votes spread around.
And Emma Chatterton is another one, I think, that the big reps within the party seen as a really big future. But look, you know, I think Nancy Liu will be in almost certainly after Port Waikato. And then, you know, you might see a few movements and things throughout the term.
Fun fact about Dale Stevens.
Yes.
He is the brother of academic Māmari Stevens and television and filmmaker Tainui Stevens.
Oh, wow.
And they're all named after Waka. So he's Altea Stevens.
Mm-hmm. Interesting fact there. Coming back to the point about the nature of the National victory. What we don't know for sure yet is whether the National Party will be able to govern with just ACT in a coalition, which is the preferred formation. As we look at it now, the seats together provide 61 of a 121-seat parliament. We can assume that would become 62 of a 122-seat parliament. Now, before we get before we can be sure those numbers are right, we need to wait for specials. And specials historically have helped the left a bit. Mm. Specials could also, and we'll come to this a bit more when we get into the Māori seats because there's a lot to talk about there. There's also the possibility of that overhang extending. So therefore, the parliament becoming more like 123 seats.
That's what it was looking like for a while
for
last
a while
night.
There, when yeah, the Māori Party were leading overhang. In six seats. There was a three, maybe 1.4. But anyway, a lot. And that would act against that would weaken, dilute the majority.
Mm.
So there's a few moving parts there, Ben. I guess the question is it enough as it stands for Christopher Luxon and the National Party to proceed on the basis of a two-party coalition? Or, you're advising the National Party here, do you jump in a car up to the Duke of Marlborough Hotel, sit down for a beer with Winston Peters and say, let's see what we can work out here just in case?
I mean, I think you wait for specials.
So you just wait for 2 weeks? No.
Yeah, well, look, you know, maybe send him a fruit basket. Okay. Congratulate him on getting back into Parliament. But you know, wait and see how things shake out. You're right. Traditionally, National lose one or two seats on the specials. There's some speculation that could be a bit little different this year because of, you know, the real desertion of Labor. But then, you know, maybe that just helps the Greens because Labor has been deserted on all sides.
You mean
sides.
Overseas?
Not just overseas. No, I mean, look, we've seen
across the board.
We've seen some pretty unusual things happening. So,
sure.
Who knows?
Sure.
And you know, but let's split the difference. Say they lose one, then there'll be one short, or there'll be sort of just on one once Bailey comes in. And you know, look, you're all, you know, you will always have the possibility of a Godev Sharma or a Jamie Lee
Ross. He was
Jamie
on the
Lee
Twitter
Ross
last night.
Or, yeah, that's right.
He was back on Twitter.
He was like, just like I predicted or something.
They would have been sitting in drafts for many, many months. It was a sort of, I told you so.
He tweeted something about Michael Woods.
If you are constantly, you know, it's this sort of, like in America in the Senate, you know, where the Democrats are always beholden to Joe Manchin, you don't really want to be in that position where any one person, you know, can become the sort of kingmaker themselves.
Mm. Yeah.
So, look, I think they'll probably, on confidence and supply at least, they'll want to reach some sort of an accommodation with New Zealand first. Winston Peters looked pretty relaxed last night. He certainly, you know, he wasn't sort of talking about, you know, a coming storm or any kind of great change. I think he wasn't
muttering darkly about Klaus Schwab.
that's right. And I think, you know, in a way, because as I said in Q&A, like, you know, even for Peters, he kind of pushed the boat out this election on a lot of policy areas, and maybe being a minor support party or on the crossbenches, as he's promised many times over the years and never quite followed through with, maybe that would actually suit him in terms of the people who have voted for him and keeping his support up.
Of course, we do have to wait for the specials because there is a very high likelihood that there's 2 million votes for New Zealand Loyal waiting to be counted.
I think we have
counted.
To wait for the affidavits, don't we? To
that's a great point.
Possibly.
New Zealand Loyal got 1.15, which is not shabby. They got more than the ALCP down on 0.39.
There were two.
ALCP got 0.39, but if they just do a little bit in specials, they get up to 4.2. If you do that, though, of course, you're back at that situation that had been described by National as the worst case scenario. You know, it's the one that we'd been warned against by John Key. You know, limbo, weeks of uncertainty, the economy hanging in the balance. It doesn't feel quite like that much because maybe New Zealand First doesn't have the leverage that it would otherwise, you know. And when John Key went around, albeit with a different sort of proportion of main party to others, he was able to negotiate on the basis that I'd love you to come in, but it's not the end of the world if you don't, right? So maybe there is a way to make, per Jessica Mitch Mackay's idea, Winston Peters Minister for Space and, you know, a few other sort of choice pickings, and then what are you thinking about? Is that a goer?
Well, I think it'd be very hard to former government with 62 people, I think you'd need some sort of accommodation with Winston, and yeah, it might be a couple of baubles, but I don't know. I guess it really depends on the mood in National. Like, do they want to try and lead with just 62? Like, ACT and National will be pretty tidy together, I imagine. So they may want to risk it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, look, early on, you know, their 100 days plans for ACT and National are basically identical, give or take sort of a few thousand public service immediate job cuts. You know, so there wouldn't be too much friction there, you know, going forward. You know, there will be differences. Yeah, look, I think they will want to give themselves a bit of a buffer, and there are numerous arrangements through the years, including New Zealand First in 2005, where they, where New Zealand First themselves see themselves as outside of government. Mm. You know, in 2005, New Zealand First pioneered ministers outside government, and we could see a return to that kind of scenario as well. Peters is probably aware that every time he's gone into government, he's come out at less than 5%. And so I think that he might see that, you know, especially given that he isn't, you know, it's not as pivotal a position in terms of leverage as maybe some people were expecting. You know, maybe he can take it a little easier this time, stay outside, throw a few stones while keeping it stable for the country, you know.
Yeah, I think he'll quite like having the ability to criticise the government from outside, but also potentially hook a couple of portfolios for him and Shane Jones.
Yeah. And he will, you know, and this is not high hope being ageist to say it, he will be 81 at the next election, you know. So although he doesn't seem like the kind of man who easily relinquishes power, or his appetite for power doesn't seem to have diminished over time. But if there was to be a transition in the leadership to Shane Jones at some point, maybe that's part of the thinking. The Labour Party, I think we need to be clear that this is a massive drop. You know, I think that there are lots of circumstances, extenuating circumstances, and I think that Chris Hipkins can rightly say he was dealt a hellishly, fiendishly difficult hand. Mm. There were so many different things. We've talked about them at length: COVID, the recovery from that, the sort of carousel of ministers exiting cabinet, none of which can really be pegged directly on Hipkins. Nevertheless, the party's gone from over 50 to under 27. They were hurt too, I think, by turnout, as we talked about a bit in advance. Turnout is being reported by the Electoral Commission as of this morning, estimated at 78.4%.
Mm.
That's down from 82.2%, and I would wager that that's Labour voters in large part. So that has kind of, I think, magnified what we saw in the polls a bit. By the way, 78.4% in the great Megapod pick the turnout number. 78.4% was picked by two people. One of them was David Seymour, and the other one was Grant Robertson.
Wow.
So if that holds, 78.4%, we have to get them in together to enjoy their box of chocolate fish. But what happened to Labour? What happened to Labour, Annabelle?
Well, yeah, all of the things that you've talked about in terms of the general seats, COVID, wealth tax, poorly performing ministers. But I think the story that we're seeing unfold in the Māori seats is very different. I don't think that Māori voters are punishing Labour and their MPs in the Māori seats. I think what we're seeing is that Māori, for a long time, have wanted an unbridled Māori voice on the left. And when Te Pāti Māori first came to be, that's what they thought they were getting.
Mm.
And then very quickly they saw that that was not the case, that it was actually a very conservative party who propped up a right-wing government. I think the way Deb and Rāwiri have managed the party over the last 3 years and JT and the strategies that they've employed have given Māori confidence that they can safely vote for a left-wing, unbridled Māori voice. I think that Māori actually like their Māori Labour MPs, but they don't want to see them being having their voices restrained. Like, I'm sure if you were to do a show of hands amongst the Māori MPs and Labour, probably all of them supported instituting a wealth tax. And I think those are the reasons that we're seeing those Māori Party MPs come through. And you know, Labour's vote has held up pretty well in the Māori seats. So I think it's about a left-wing Māori vote rather than a vote against those Labour Māori MPs per se.
Mm. Yeah, I think the only hiccup to that theory is that if it was about sort of wanting an unbridled Māori voice, then surely there would have been a bit more support for Mika Whaitiri.
Because she is seen as an incumbent. And I think one of the interesting things that we're going to, and also people of Eke Ruarawhiti, they're still in the clutches of a crisis, and she walked out on them without a compelling reason. I think that the great question that's going to hang over Eke Ruarawhiti is, would Heather Teo Skipworth have won that seat if their party had kept her? Yeah. And actually, looking at the results, I think she very well may have.
Yeah, that's right. And I don't think, hard to say, of course, because I was so wrong in my predictions about them, but the Māori seats, I think part of it is a general extension of what's happening, what happened everywhere around the country, which was, it wasn't just a swing from Labour to National. You know, it was basically almost like a flying off a spinning carousel from Labour in all directions.
Everybody else.
So, you know, the Greens
got electorates. Which is what happens when you go over 50%.
Yeah, the Greens got electorates. The Party Māori got electorates. ACT sort of, you know, that was their own thing. But, and National picked up, you know, crazy ones. You know, I mean, I was at the National Party party last night down on the waterfront. And, you know, as soon as I met somebody, I just had to say, you know, congratulations, just in case they were a presumptive winner of an electorate that I'd never heard of, you know. And
I was down there too, briefly, and as I arrived, there was a chant of Carlos, 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 and it was the team of Carlos Chung, the national candidate for Mount Roskill, who has beaten Michael Wood.
Definitely someone that I've heard of before.
Extraordinary.
The other thing that's happened in the Māori seats is that Māori see the rise of the right and the rhetoric that's happening on the right. And so that vote is also, again, like I said before, not just about punishing Labour, but sending a strong signal to the right who wants to erode the rights of Māori in terms of treaty, equity, te aka whai ora, which is probably now gone. And so it is a protest vote, but it's not a protest vote against what was just the government. It's a protest vote about to the incoming government.
It's interesting too, in that there's probably a certain amount of strategic voting, which we sometimes see in the Māori seats, in that if, you know, we've got four at the moment going to Te Pāti Māori, two are in the balance, and those are Tamaki Makaurau, where there's a 495-seat vote lead to Pēni Henare, and Te Tai Tokorau, where Kelvin Davis has 487 votes, both narrow, both vulnerable to special shifting. Mm. But Māori get greater representation, arguably, by making that overhang happen. And having therefore, per your theory, more strength on the left.
Well, like Ben says, Māori are the most strategic voters in the country, and you know there's been this narrative that Māori only ever vote National. But if you look at places like Te Tai Tokerau and the churn in those seats over the last like 30 years between Labour, New Zealand First, Te Pāti Māori, Mana Pāti, all of that, like you cannot bank on Māori votes. Māori votes are no longer safe votes. No one has, a mortgage on the Māori votes anymore.
Te Tai Tonga, can we just talk quickly about that as well? I mean, that has been
mind-blowing.
You know, not to say that it's necessarily an issue of, you know, of royal succession or primogeniture or whatever, but at the Tiru Katane, whānau's had a grip on that for a long time.
Yeah. But literally the better part of it, about more than 70 years right. over the last 100 years.
And you were bigging up on this podcast the other day, Annabelle, Tākuta Ferris.
Mm.
And he's in.
Yeah, he's in. Can I say I like and great for him? If I was Māori TV, I'd be demanding a refund on their poll results because they were so wildly out. And you know, and that's not good because polls influence the way people think and the way people vote. But anyway, he's pulled off an incredible victory there. And he, like I said before, is the future of the Māori Party. I saw Rino do an interview very early in the evening on Whakaata Māori last night. Literally only about maybe 15% of the vote was counted. And he did a very gracious, essentially, concession, kōrero, and said that, you know, he is pleased to see that such strong advocacy for te iwi Māori will remain, and talked about, you know, this is the world of politics, the tide rises and the tide goes out. And what I really appreciated about his kōrero is that sometimes in the Māori seats people get a sense of entitlement, and when the vote doesn't go their way, they berate Māori voters and compare them to, like, bashed women and all of that sort of stuff. And, you know, Rino was incredibly gracious and classy in his kōrero last night, as was Nanaia. And you know, who would have thought that he'd be unseated? But he's a phenomenal, you know, competitor to Taku Tai.
Nanaia Mahuta. Yeah, 20, I mean, 26 years. You know,
these are two real sort of dynastic toplings.
Absolutely,
And what's your sort of thought on a few things were kind of clicking together in my head that Duncan Grieve of the spin-off did actually do really, I kind of hated him for writing it because it was a long profile that made me like Shane Jones again. And and Jones there, you know, he talked about how when he was sort of coming up, you know, in what was then called Māoridom, now would be like Tau Māori.
Yeah, it's funny,
you know,
how we don't say that anymore.
It was people like, you know, Matu Rata and things like that. And he said, you know, nowadays, you know, people are getting, you know, they're following more in the footsteps of Moana Jackson or Elizabeth, not Elizabeth Rutten, you know, the exact opposite, Margaret Mutu, and sort of drawing more, you know, from sort of identity as Indigenous peoples, you know, sort of broadly. And Debbie Nariwapaka, I know, has sort of talked about, you know, more rangatahi, you know, sort of see Māori identity as, like, you know, really primary to their everyday lives, you know, in a sense that, you know, that maybe wasn't previously.
Yeah.
And so, you know, to what extent do you think that was sort of reflected?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to know, and I think it'll be quite hard to know until we see what the breakdown of voter turnout is in terms of rangatahi. I suspect what we're seeing is our kura kaupapa kids coming of age and taking part in the voting system and not, you know, like it's not just the kaumātua who are deciding anymore. And so that puts those dynastic seats at risk because with the old loyalties no longer apply. So I think it's about, you know, those movements that were started in the 70s and 80s coming to bear in terms of our democracy here.
Raising capital or taking your business to the world? Investment Fix has the lowdown on everything you need to make it happen. This season, we're exploring the US market, the opportunities it offers, what it takes to grow a business there, and the best way to approach investors. Join some of the superstars of the investment and business world as they share advice from their time in the US so you can make your mahi count in this massive market. The Investment Fix podcast, brought to you by Invest New Zealand. Tune in today.
Talo for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Returning to the Labour Party, Chris Hipkins, after his speech at the Hutt Valley Event Centre last night, said that he would take some time to reflect. He wasn't making any decisions yet, basically. You know, and I think Megan Woods, I don't know if she was on Q&A this morning.
Yeah, she was.
Then she suggested that they'd like him to stay. Is that
she said he'd have the confidence of the caucus.
Yeah.
Yep.
The caucus, I think, needs to vote to endorse within 3 months under the rules as they are. And, you know, I mean, arguably he showed himself to be New Zealand's best opposition leader during the course of the campaign, you know. He really, and so you'd expect. He's very good in Parliament. He's quite tenacious. Does he get persuaded to stay on? I mean, you know, it's these days it's not that usual and around the world for people to stick around. Does he stay? And if he doesn't, who else is there?
I think that, you know, I think that there's value in leaders who have lost, like, staying on and helping to rebuild and having another tap at it. I think, you know, you learn a lot during a campaign as a leader, and I think, you know, sometimes we can be too quick to chuck that experience away. But at the same time, I think that Hipkins, you know, who campaigned like his heart out literally in those last couple of weeks, all respect to him, but he actually needs to do some soul searching about where he sits in the political landscape, because Labor are absolutely being punished by their own people for their policy positions. That's why Greens are doing so epically well. So unless he's prepared to you know, look deep inside and think about things like, you know, wealth tax and all of that, then there may not be any point in him staying.
Not for no reason did we hear on the campaign trail various Labor candidates saying, basically, I'd quite like to do capital gains tax and or wealth tax, but we're not allowed to at the moment, not with Chippy. And so that does, given he has made those pledges, Ben, not to shift on those policy positions, given he has pretty much tied himself to the mast of relatively risk-averse Labor manifesto. Do you think he A wants to stay, B will be wanted to stay as and when Labor starts to rebuild itself from both a personnel and policy focus?
I would say he almost certainly doesn't want to stay. Mm-hmm. He's been Prime Minister for about 9 or 10 months. It'll be with the caretaker period. Barring something extraordinarily unusual happening, he's unlikely to ever be Prime Minister again. I think he will probably want to start the next phase of his life. You know, I think there are certainly arguments for him staying. You know, we've seen what happens to oppositions, both the national opposition and the Labour opposition before it. And, you know, this is over the last 15 years, just, you know, the churn and the chaos that sort of happens. First of all, because, you know, any new leader thinks, well, this is my shot. You know, you don't get sort of two terms anymore. So anyone who comes in as leader sort of thinks, this is my shot, I have to make this work. And, you know, they tend to kind of force the pace a little bit. It creates a lot of disruption, I think. Chris Hipkins is very good at attacking, you know, as we saw again, yeah, looked like an opposition leader for the last, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of the campaign. And, you know, nobody is expecting, you know, innovative or exciting new policy from Labor in the next year or the next 2 years. And if they unveil new and exciting policy, it will fall barren on the ground because no one cares, right? And, you know, they don't need new policy probably until the election, the next election year, or maybe slightly before it. Prior to that, what they want to do is weaken confidence in the new government. And it should just be attack, attack, attack. Mm. We saw Bill English promise the opposition from hell when Ardern's government came in 2017. And that started off very well, you know, in terms of, you know, sort of flooding the zone with parliamentary questions, just attack.
Yeah, there's that great photo that. Of them surrounding the whip with, Simon Bridges, Jamie Lee Roth.
and they really sort of ran rings around them, but then the wheels fell off because of leadership wanted to leave.
So it sounds like what you're pitching is Hipkins stick around for a year and a half and just – Keep things firm while people have conversations with each other and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, look, to get from Helen Clark to Jacinda Ardern, the Labour Party had to go via Phil Goff, David Shearer, David Cunliffe, Andrew Little, and that's the reality. And, we don't need to go over what happened in the National Party similarly when they were opposition. And those will be the thoughts that will be in the minds of many of the senior Labour apparatchiks now, won't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they won't, and look, we'll see more departures, of course. I don't think Grant Robertson's going to stick around for this.
Yeah.
But, it is very, it is important that they don't just sort of fall to pieces and it won't, it won't be immediate, but, the decline can set in. Mm. Even Simon Bridges showed, in 2017 to 2018 to 2020, if you stay solid and if the government messes up, you can make ground. There was every chance that he might have beaten Jacinda Ardern. I think the last thing they want to do is figure out all of their sort of ideological differences in the first month back, because they don't need to and no one cares.
Yeah. The Greens. I went by their event last night too, and there was a real sense of there was a real upbeat mood there, which is interesting. It's a record result. Why shouldn't it be? But also, they're away from the levers of power. 14 MPs, though. We talked about those electorate wins. That's a pretty impressive result. The question of leadership crops up for the Greens too. I think that both leaders could probably stay given this result if they wish to. Madama Davidson, I think, might quite fancy it. And I'm wondering, Annabelle, whether James Shaw wants to stick around for what would be, he's there to be climate change minister, isn't he? That is his overwhelming driving passion in politics. And the chances of him having that again, let's face it, were probably 6 years ago, 6 years away. At best, most likely, given the way that we normally do government. And so I'm wondering whether it's Marama Davidson, Chloe Swarbrick leadership in the Green Party.
Possibly. I don't know James well enough to know if there's a desire there for him to stand down now or if he'll feel obliged to, stay on and help blood up all of these new MPs that they've brought into Parliament. And Matidia talked well last night, I thought, on TVNZ about how there is so much mahi to do when you're in opposition, especially when you've just brought in a big chunk of new MPs. Mm. And I think if the Greens have shown us anything, it's about how effective you can be in opposition and, particularly so during Matidia's tenure with some of the policies they were able to get over the lines, like the, the warm housing, all of that sort of stuff.
The
insulation and lots of other things as well.
Yeah, and look, even though a teal deal will never happen, there's no reason they can't get a memorandum of understanding from Luxon for a bit more insulation.
Yeah, that's the rheumatic fever stuff.
That seems to be something that National and the Greens, usually come to terms on.
And in terms of bringing some of those new people in who come, there are a range of different people, some of whom are more vocal than others, some of whom have different passions to the others.
In
opposition,
Greens,
you can do that,
different
right?
Different styles and,
Just let rip, have a go.
Afeso's in, eh?
Afeso's in,
Huhana Linden's in.
Huhana Linden. Some guy, Scott somebody that I haven't heard of.
Steve Abel is in,
yep.
Yeah.
Set up his electorate office in a large tree in Auckland.
I think Steve Abel had the whole induction thing at the last election, and then
and
it fell away, didn't it?
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk though, because I don't think it's been talked about enough. Is what the kind of government that we've got coming up now? It's a Let's assume for 1 second that New Zealand First, if involved, are a sort of an appendage part. Then a National Act government, what does it look like? Now, it's not the 3-part to 1-part that had been on the cards on the way. Yeah. And I chatted to Andrew Hoggard.
Or even getting close to 2-1
at some point. And I said to Andrew Hoggard, do you think you'll be in cabinet on this? And he said, oh, I don't know, to be honest. He said, well, you know, we're not going to have as many cabinet members as we would otherwise, you know, and he's someone who, so it could be that ACT end up with 3 of 20. It's 3 or 4 really, isn't it? Based on these sorts of numbers. Anyway, what kind of government is it? It's a government of smaller, small, you know, bringing back the size of the
min
public person. It's a min kawanatanga. It's a government of cuts. It's the most right-wing government we will have seen for a long time. I mean, we haven't had a National ACT coalition, if that's what it is, ever before.
Certainly not by itself, no. The Key government, which is the only other time ACT has been in government.
ACT's never had seats in cabinet.
No, that's right. Mm. But they've had ministers outside cabinet. Sure. Yeah. And they were part of the government in 2008, 2011, and sort of, and then they were a vestigial tail.
On the periphery. This is different. Yeah. This is categorically different.
And look, it remains to be seen. There are areas where they have a lot of commonalities. Like I think I've said, you know, the first 100 days for both of them is pretty much exactly the same. Mm. And so there will be absolutely no problems getting any of that over the line. The 4-to-1 sort of ratio, I think, means that Seymour's referendum is gone. Good riddance. That's not something that the National wants to buy into. But then, you know, in other areas, you know, sort of treaty relationships, there are commonalities between the two, you know, that are sort of less sinister, you know, which is that, you know, ACT have long believed in devolution and localism, you know, by charter schools. They don't see it as part of the treaty relationship. They just see it as sort of, you know, somewhere government should be going in terms of, you know, divesting from the central state. And that's also something that Luxon is very big on. It was notable that he said, you know, we need to all work together. And he said, you know, government, business, iwi, and community groups. Mm. So he specifically name-checked iwi as, you know, partners for the next government. And I think we'll see a bit more, you know, in that space than probably, you know, some people seem to think, because I think National did kind of, they got tangled up in the sort of ACT New Zealand First sort of fight to be most racist. And I think that sort of, you know, I think they kind of caught a bit of crossfire because of that.
He also has, as a requirement, which was sometimes phrased as almost a bottom line or not, a referendum on the definition of the Treaty of Waitangi.
Yeah, that's the referendum that's gone. Mm.
Which included the... didn't use the word Māori or iwi or anything. That's gone. You think that's gone?
That's gone. That's not happening.
Do you feel confident about that, Annabelle?
I feel like because everybody's saying that it's gone, that it might not be gone, that he might that he might dig his heels in.
Is this about how you wanted the Irish to win the rugby?
A little bit. I think I'm interested to know what happens with the firearms licence thing.
Mm, the register, yeah.
Yeah, the register.
Yeah, I mean, that could be an ACT win. You know, there are certainly some, you know, it's a very expensive exercise, as all government IT projects are. And, you know, I mean, there have been some, you know, there have been horror stories already about, you know, lists of gun owners being supplied to criminals, you know, after leaks. So, you know, which is exact... You know, that's the nightmare scenario for this sort of thing. So, you know, I think there can certainly be some movement there. One of the interesting things will be where ACT and New Zealand First, say, have commonalities, you know, kind of who gets to announce it, you know. But, you know, look, I think the other thing will be, yeah, the size of the state, you know, trimming down, you know, the costs of the public service. But the other
how
thing,
quickly Te Aka Whai Ora gets dismantled?
Yeah, look, that'll be gone. That'll be folded back into either Te Whatu Ora or the Ministry of Health, you know, in the different roles, the commissioning, I guess.
Do you think Ministry of Māori Development, Ministry of Pacifica? Pacific Island Affairs, Human Rights Commission, do you think all of those things will go as he campaigned?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. No, I mean, certainly not Ministry for Pacific Peoples. Look, there is an argument that Te Puni Kokiri, since the creation of Te Ara Whiti, the Crown Māori Relationship Office, there is an argument that Te Puni Kokiri doesn't really have that much of a function. You know, right now it basically exists to sort of distribute grants and, you know, it's, you can sort of think that there might be efficiencies there. Te Puni Kokiri is certainly not a high-performing government agency and hasn't been for a long time. So, but in terms of Ministry of Pacific Peoples, that sort of thing, you just have optics problems trying to abolish the Human Rights Commission. But what we might see is, you know, a bit more direction, you know, in terms of Human Rights Commission being, you know, letters of expectation from the ministers saying, you know, actually we would prefer if you focused on the core business, you know, of the rights in the Human Rights Act, as opposed to trying to widen your ambit and doing housing inquiries and things like that that duplicate a lot of other work that is being done, you know, across government. So that, you know, you might see things like that. Ministry for Pacific Peoples, I'd be amazed if they kept the same sort of budget that they have now, because it sort of blew out. It was increased by about 400% to create a Pacific Peoples strategy. So, you know, I mean, there's, you know, I think they would say that there's a lot of scope to save for savings there. But no, I don't think we'll see acts of wish list of sort of long established departments kind of cut.
I'm not banking on those things being off the table. I think that what Ben has described will happen as a minimum. But I don't think we should underestimate how deeply Seymour believes in a lot of this stuff and how much he might be prepared to really dig his heels in, particularly given that it is quite a slim majority as a National Act government. So, I mean, I really hope that what Ben is saying is correct, but I wouldn't be...
It's going to be fascinating to see, because David Seymour has not been backward in coming forward about how robust he intends to be in negotiations. He has not simply said that will come for after the election. But most of that talk happened when what we were looking at was a coalition that was one quarter, sometimes even more, comprising the ACT Party with the rest National. And now it's a bit more old-fashioned insofar as we have one very clear leading party of government. Last thing before we go. Christopher Luxon, Prime Minister. Over the course of the campaign, he has surprised a lot of us, I think, by being really personable, almost charismatic in his campaigning, you know, doing the meet and greet, press the flesh sort of stuff. He showed a real aptitude for that part of, which is an important part of the role. He's continued, however, to be glued to his talking points. And Chris Hipkins went at him quite hard over the latter part of the campaign and in the last debate, especially on why won't you answer a question, will you give a straight answer? He still struggles. He still struggles to think on his feet and to offer answers and to sometimes just give a straight answer when a straight answer will do fine. Is it the case that, a bit like Chris Hipkins, seems more naturally a leader of the opposition, maybe Christopher Luxon wasn't naturally a leader of the opposition, might be a bit more naturally, with his managerial basis, like that or not, more naturally a prime minister? How do you both feel about Christopher Luxon, prime minister, and the challenge
that he
faces?
It's going to be fascinating to watch. Would he be the most inexperienced politician to ever become prime minister in the country since Parliament was started?
Experience,
I don't know.
As a politician,
I mean, literally, he's going to have to have John Key on speed dial and be like, do you know where the toilets are in the beehive? Like, I'm lost on the ninth floor. Help. So,
what's this thing they keep saying, post-cab? What does that mean, John?
Are we drinking red wine on a Monday morning? Like,
I think that might actually be the case, that, you know, his skill set is you know, his skill set is certainly not, you know, was certainly not that of, you know, a born politician, you know, when he came in. He, you know, he has improved. He's improved a lot. Mm. You know, what was his biggest weakness when he came into Parliament? It was not sticking to the line. It was allowing himself to be drawn off into sort of thought experiments and theological discussions live on air. Mm. And, you know, and he really, really, you know, fixed that. You know, another way of looking at it, you know, it is frustrating for journalists, sometimes frustrating for the public, but, you know, sure, Chris Hipkins was attacking him, saying, you know, answer the question. But then election day rolls around and National got 39%, which was higher than anyone expected. And Chris
that,
Hipkins,
ladies and gentlemen, is the most important question of all.
Yeah, look, you know, so it's a real testament to, you know, they had a plan and they stuck to it. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
Do we owe Chris Bishop an apology? Did he get the strategy right, by the way? Do you think maybe half an apology? You know,
it happened in spite of him, to be honest.
You know, look, you know, it really is a sort of, you know, the QED, the thing speaks for itself. Was it a successful campaign? They're going to form a government. So it was. Absolutely.
I think, you know, we've seen Luxon struggle when he's being questioned or, you know, there's some, you know, demand for accountability or transparency. And I do think that certainly in the first few months of his prime ministership, he's going to struggle with the shock and awe of what's demanded of you in terms of those things as a PM as opposed to just a leader of the opposition.
The other thing, though, is that as PM, he'll have the whole public service. He'll, you know, they were operating in a low information environment, right? Mm-hmm. The demands on oppositions these days are actually, I think, quite unrealistic in terms of, you know, creating this fully costed, fully realistic, you know, fiscal plan. That's meant to sort of, you know, stand up to all scrutiny and be, you know, completely unassailable. Mm. When you're in government, you know, that all gets done for you. And once, you know, once he has the sort of, he certainly seems like somebody who can process information very quickly. You know, he's got that chief executive mindset. You'll find that, you know, he isn't lost for answers as prime minister as much. Right, because he will be in a position, unlike really as the leader of the opposition, where he has access to much more information than the people asking him the questions, and he's driving the agenda
in the briefings,
and he's setting the tone. He's deciding what he talks about at post-cab. So, you know, look, I actually think, you know, it is one of those things where he will be a better prime minister. You know, Jacinda Ardern was a much better prime minister than she was an opposition politician.
Well, she pulled off the great trick of never being.
She was only leader of the opposition for like 2 months.
Well, that was it. That was the trick. She never really had to be.
That's right.
Quotidian leader of the opposition.
And for almost 10
perfect,
years before
perfect
that.
Timing.
You know, yeah, she didn't land hits.
That's
she
the deal.
You know.
Chris Hipkins, what we need you to do is just hang on, mate, for a little longer, by which we mean until 6 weeks out from the next election, at which point we'll have worked out who the next one is. Look, we got to go. Congratulations to everybody who's been elected. Genuine congratulations and genuine commiserations to those who've missed out. It's tough. We wish you all the best. We're now on our fifth Prime Minister at Gone by Lunchtime, believe it or not.
Are we?
Yeah. Yeah, true.
Wow.
Key English, Adrian Hipkins Luxon. So there you go. And we show no signs of flagging. The gas is still in the tank. And with luck, we will be back very soon. Thanks, everyone. Kia ora.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here, podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate. The Spinoff Podcast Network.